What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the 10th anniversary edition of the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Cohen and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is United States Congressman Ron Barber. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Cohen and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a momentous morning here on Too Jewish, our 10th anniversary show. Believe it or not, I can't really believe it myself, to be honest. We have now presented 523 episodes of Too Jewish to the world with no sign of stopping in sight. Anniversaries are always an excuse to look back and see just what it is we are supposed to be celebrating and what it is we thought we were doing when we started all of this in the first place. But first, we really should pop a champagne cork to get us going. And now, our traditional anniversary toast. L'chaim! For 10 years of Everything Jewish brought to you weekly right here on the radio. Now, when we began Too Jewish a decade ago, our goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anyone and everyone who's interested in Jewish life, ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, films, books, food, art, wine, holidays, humor, Torah, and anything and everything else Jewish. Too Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors, of course, but it was also created to help people who aren't Jewish learn about, be inspired and influenced by the fabulous religion and culture of Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living, without limiting ourselves to just one movement or ethnic or even national aspect, we hope to explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century. In many ways, that means translating what it has already been for nearly 4,000 years and continues to be today and for the foreseeable future, as Fiddler on the Roof taught, tradition. But in another sense, that means exploring every new, interesting, exciting, weird, and even distressing trend in today's and tomorrow's Judaism. And I'm not sure if 10 years of Too Jewish gives us quite enough perspective in the grand sweep of all those centuries and millennia of Jewish life to identify which new elements of Jewish experience have been truly transformative. But since this is an anniversary show, I can identify a few changes over this decade that highlight real differences in Jewish life. First, on the national American Jewish scene, the Birthright Israel program has succeeded nearly beyond its wildest dreams in sending a huge number of young Jews to Israel for a crash course on pro-Israel experiences and feelings. This has been nothing but a positive influence in helping bridge the gap between Israel and young American Jews and connecting marginally affiliated teens, 20-somethings, and, well, now the veterans are 30-somethings, closer to the homeland of the Jewish heart, Israel. Second, also here in the U.S., political support for Israel in Washington has never been stronger or broader. If there is a more universal bipartisan consensus in our nation's capital than the integrity and flourishing of Israel, I am unaware of it. It has gotten to the point where opposing virtually anything pro-Israel is close to political suicide. That was not the case 10 years ago. Third, in spite of international political and even military failures, Israel is stronger now than it has ever been. It has flourished economically while the rest of the world has struggled, at best, over the past 10 years. The completion of the border fence more or less ended Palestinian terror attacks in most of Israel proper, and Israel has thrived primarily under conservative governments. It looks to continue that trend in spite of external challenges and social unrest. Fourth, the post-denominational form of Judaism everybody was trumpeting that would succeed the labels of Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox Judaism ain't happening. The conservative movement is indeed on the point of full implosion, and there are challenges and fractures in the other major movements. But if you are doing Jewish stuff seriously, you are probably connected with one of those ancient movements still. And fifth, the unaffiliated, not very practicing, but still vaguely Jewish part of our population here in the U.S. is growing and not any more connected than they were 10 years ago, a decade ago, which means that we need Two Jewish Radio and, of course, our podcasts more than ever today. And so, to play us in on this celebratory morning, we will enjoy our now traditional and classic, but always new and exciting, Shehecheyanu, the prayer for all new and happy occasions. This one by Meyer Machtenberg, sung by former Two Jewish guest, cantor Alberto Mizrahi. Blessed are you, God, who gives us life, sustains us, and brings us to such a happy occasion. That was from the Western Winds, Abe Mizrahi singing the prayer thanking God for celebrations like our 10th anniversary of Two Jewish. And while I'm profoundly grateful to God for health and the ability to teach and explore and enjoy the amazing diversity of Judaism every week on the air, I am most grateful to you, our faithful listening audience, because you are what makes this show go and grow and flourish. When we come back on this 10th anniversary show of Two Jewish, in just a few moments, we'll meet our guest, Congressman Ron Barber, who had to replace his close friend and boss and our good friend, Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, in the House of Representatives this year. Find out what that experience was like and what issues involving Israel are in play in Congress when we come back in a few moments on the 10th anniversary show of Two Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. I love the fact that when people come into Mama's, they feel right at home. For example, a lot of times they'll walk up to the counter and give a shout out to my nephew Vinny, or they'll see Liz and ask her about the kids. The truth is, people feel at home at our restaurants because that's how we feel about our restaurants. But Tucson's a big town, and there's still a bunch of people who haven't experienced Mama's friendly atmosphere yet. They don't know that the Spina family opened the first Mama's back in 1980. Or that our pizzas are made from the freshest ingredients, or that our sauce goes all the way out to the edge. or that we have an absolutely huge pizza called the Mama's Family Size Pizza. So whether you're a Mama's regular or a newbie, we invite you to come on home to Mama's Family Style Pizza, calzones, and Hero sandwiches. We've got four convenient locations that you can find on the web at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning for our 10th anniversary show, Congressman Ron Barber. Ron was born in Wakefield, England, and grew up in a military family. His father was stationed there at the time. He first came to love Tucson when his dad was an airman at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in the 1950s. He went to Tucson schools, graduated from the University of Arizona in 1963 while still in high school in Tucson. He met his wife, Nancy. They have been together ever since. They went on their first date in 1960, raised their daughters, and he has grandchildren here in Tucson. The whole family's here. Ron had a 30-year career with the Division of Developmental Disabilities in the Arizona Department of Economic Security, eventually serving as its director. He worked to get people with disabilities out of government-run institutions and back into the community. Under his direction, the division improved in all areas. In 2007, Ron Barber was appointed Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' district director. Gabby Giffords, a longtime friend of Two Jewish. In that capacity, Barber helped Southern Arizona families in every way, in dealing with the federal government. Tragically, on January 8th, 2011, Ron Barber was with Representative Gabby Giffords during her Congress on Your Corner event at the Safeway in Northwest Tucson. An assassin, Jared Loughner, shot the Congresswoman, Ron Barber, and 17 others. Six of them died, including one of Barber's aides. Representative Giffords and Barber were critically wounded. Shortly after the shooting, Ron Barber and his family established the Fund for Civility, Respect, and Understanding. In January of 2012, Gabby Giffords resigned from office to focus on our recovery and asked Ron Barber to run a special election to replace her. He has now been in Congress for 2 months. Mazel tov. Good morning, Ron.
Thank you. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your 10th anniversary. That's an awesome length of time to be on the air, and I know that listeners in Tucson have enjoyed the shows very much, as I have.
Thank you so much. I want you to talk just a little bit, if you don't mind, about what it's like replacing a close friend, your boss, Gabby Giffords.
Well, first of all, I was deeply honored that the Congresswoman asked me to run. I said to her at the time, I've never said no to you. All the time we've worked together, but I have to pause and tell you I'm not sure. I really had to get together with my family talk about it, and with my doctor to make sure I was fit to run, and of course I ultimately decided to do so. It's an awesome responsibility not only to follow Congresswoman Giffords, but to represent Southern Arizona, and I take it very seriously. I'm very honored not only to be asked by her, but to be elected by the folks here in the district. And here I go again with another election. It's a little bit of a wild ride, you know, to be running four elections in 7 months, but that's what I've gotten myself into. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm very proud to be working in Congress on behalf of the people I represent, as well as being back in the district, which I am right now for a month, looking forward to visiting with constituents and hearing what they have to say about issues and making sure I'm their voice in Washington.
Well, we will talk much more with Congressman Ron Barber when we come back on this 10th anniversary edition of Two Jewish. Among my most pleasant and least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the total Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know anyone who might qualify for the 2012 Cohan Award, just visit our website, CohanAward.com. That's CohanAward.com. And you can find the nomination form there. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's CohanAward.com, CohanAward.com. It's a good visit and a great place to learn about a terrific award and all the recipients.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio, T-O-O Jewish Radio at yahoo.com, or go to our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. And now, here is our weekly 2012 presidential election campaign Jewish moment. Presumptive Republican nominee for president Mitt Romney visited Israel last week, hosting a $50,000 a plate fundraising dinner in Jerusalem for American and other Jews, with billionaire Sheldon Adelson seated next to him. What do you get for $50,000 a plate? It better taste good. Anyway, Adelson, well, therein lies a tale. Sheldon Adelson is reputed to be the very richest Jew in the world, with a Las Vegas and Macau casino empire rumored to be worth upwards of $25 billion, with a B. Adelson also owns the most popular Israeli daily paper, Yisrael Hayom, which is distributed free. During the primary season, Adelson was Newt Gingrich's principal financial backer, and he funded many attack ads against Mitt Romney. Now, of course, he is one of Romney's principal financial backers in the campaign against President Barack Obama. So it goes in American politics. The visit to Israel by Romney provoked dramatically different responses from the various sectors of the Jewish world. While the Jewish right celebrated his visit, and Romney's own campaign released a series of ads asking, "Who shares your values on Israel?" implying it's him, not President Obama. Columnist Tom Friedman, likely the most influential foreign policy writer in the media today, wrote a scathing critique of Romney's pandering to the settler movement's extreme positions in Israel. He basically said that Romney contributes to a blind and stupid approach, I'm paraphrasing here, but not much, that gives carte blanche to the worst elements in Israeli political culture. Interesting. The good news is that the only gaffe Romney committed in Jerusalem was to say something pretty general about how the culture of Israel has helped it flourish, implying that the culture of the Palestinians does not. Compared to how he insulted his British hosts over the Olympics, why in the world did he do that? This was pretty benign and has elements of actual truth in it. That was our campaign 2012 Jewish election moment. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Good morning, Guy. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
There have been a lot of stories about President Assad of Syria perhaps transporting chemical weapons. Why would he do that? Why would he try to provoke Israel to maybe attack him when he's trying to hold on to power against everyone in civil war against him?
Assad, the ruler that currently controls Syria,
Bashar Assad,
is fighting the opposition there. Now, Assad comes from a religious group called the Alawites, which is a group that's split out of the Shia. The majority of people in Syria are Sunnis, and most of the opposition today are Sunnis. And as people hear on the news, they're ongoing massacres in Syria by Assad people against the opposition. There are ongoing attacks by the opposition against Assad's people.
Killed his defense minister a couple weeks ago and so on.
Which is very significant. Having that said, we need to remember that Syria, under Assad's control, is probably one of the leaders in the world today in obtaining chemical warheads for weapons. Okay, chemical missiles. That's their main strategic weapon, and that was always their main threat on Israel to prevent Israel of invading their area and so on and so forth. Having that said, from Assad's perspective, you know, if you start a war with Israel, that might stop the opposition from fighting against you. It creates chaos. The Israelis attack. If the opposition fights against Assad, that means the opposition is supporting Israel, which is the worst thing.
Slander in Syria, right?
Yeah, you know, if you support Israel, you deserve to die in the Arab world, basically. So that's probably part of his thoughts. The other thoughts, of course, is to send a message out to the world, don't mess with me. I'm doing whatever I do within my country, which is basically slaughtering his own people. Don't mess with me, because if you do, I have those chemical warheads and I can use them against anyone. And we need to remember that Assad does have missiles, Scud missiles, that have very long reach. They can reach Israel, they can reach Turkey, they can reach probably up to Greece in some situations. So that's, you know, that's a real threat against the world.
Boy, it's, you know, nobody ever went broke underestimating the complexity of Middle Eastern politics, and Assad is one of the more devious practitioners of it.
Definitely, and the main concern from Israel and the Western world now is if Assad falls, those weapons might fall into even worse hands, like the Hezbollah or any other terror group who could smuggle them to any place in the world and use them for anything.
Cheerful thoughts. Well, we'll talk next week, Guy.
Have a great week.
Thank you. I'll try to sleep, too. Thank you. Bye, Guy. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Bila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, we started in the south of France last week, which has, particularly in Avignon, a tremendous Jewish history going deep, deep into, I guess, the earliest Jewish settlements in Europe, nearly outside of Rome. Let's talk a little bit about Avignon and the Jewish community there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the Avignon Jewish community predates the Roman Jewish community, because actually there were Jews in Rome
before
it was Rome.
I don't think it does. But it's
during the time of the Maccabees there were Jews in Rome.
Outside of Rome.
Right. But as Rome conquered Gaul in 55 BC and France became an important part of the Roman Empire, and the Romans built all these amphitheaters and famous bridges and arches throughout Provence, of which Avignon was one time capital of a separate little country called the Comtat de Venaissin. This whole area became an important part of the Roman Empire and therefore an important site for Jewish communities who, as you know, at one point made up 10% of the population of the Roman Empire. So not only in Avignon, but even smaller places like the site of the sous-préfecture, reference last week's little French lesson about the préfecture, Cavaillon, which is famous for its little miniature cantaloupes that are absolutely delicious. Cavaillon has one of the oldest Jewish cemeteries in Europe. It dates back to the 6th century. It has an ancient Jewish community. Not much of that is left. In Avignon, however, there is still a functioning synagogue with daily minions and a fairly decent-sized congregation every Shabbat and every holiday. Mostly, as I think I said last week, mostly now of North African origin. But it's an interesting community in that it's very mixed, and it has relationships with Jews in Israel, with the few Jews who remain in North Africa, and of course with Jews in Paris, who are their own mixed bag and have their own set of issues, concerns, priorities, et cetera, et cetera. But what's, I think, particularly interesting is, like in the old days in the South, in the U.S., you know, harkening back a century and a half, let's say, to the second half of the 19th century, when lots of small towns had little Jewish congregations and sometimes even buildings, like small temples or whatever, and you didn't have to be in a major urban center like Birmingham or Atlanta or Nashville or Memphis, but any small town had a Jewish community with a daily meeting or whatever, that region of France... And the other region that has this for different reasons is Alsace. But in Provence, and particularly in the Vaucluse, every little town had a Rue des Juifs and a Jewish synagogue or temple and has a distinguished Jewish history. And when the popes actually lived in Avignon for a century and a half...
Part of the Great Schism in the Catholic Church.
Right. Well, that was... The Great Schism was a different thing. That was when the Eastern Orthodox establishment separated itself.
Part of another schism in the Catholic Church.
The anti-popes established themselves in Rome, and the real popes
found
refuge
in
the country that they referred to as the most faithful daughter of the church, which is France.
France, right.
And they built this huge palace, which is today about two blocks from this Place de Jérusalem, where the synagogue stands. And the Jewish quarter was literally in the shadow of the Pope's palace, and the Jews were always very clearly under the protection of the popes while the popes were in Avignon. I mean, they followed to a T the teachings of St. Augustine about the Jews' need to survive as a witness people.
Fascinating. A very rich and deep history in the south of France for Jews. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish every week for 10 years as a public service. This one comes from the recent London Olympic Games. A New York Jew visiting London for the Olympics was shopping on exclusive Regent Street. He entered a posh gourmet food store. A salesman in a morning coat with tie and tails approached him and asked, "May I be of assistance to you, sir?" "Yes," replied the customer, "I'd like a pound of lox." "Sorry, sir," answered the cultured salesman, "do you mean smoked salmon?" Okay, a pound of smoked salmon. "Anything else?" "Yeah, a dozen blintzes." "I believe you mean crepes." Okay, a dozen crepes. "Anything else?" "Yes, a pound of chopped liver." "You are probably referring to pâté." Okay, said the customer, a pound of pate, and could you deliver this to my hotel this Saturday? Sorry, sir, said the salesperson, we don't schlep chazarai on Shabbos. Okay, so chazarai is stuff you're schlepping, you know, junk, chazarai. Anyway, that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Re'eh, the fourth Sedra in the book of Deuteronomy, which follows a sequence of marvelous Torah portions with yet another remarkable text. Re'eh includes one of the most radical statements in the whole of Torah. Ki yihyeh v'chai avyon me'achad achecha be'achad sharecha. If there is among you a poor man, one of your brothers, within one of your gates in the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand from your needy brother. Ki fatoach tiftach et yadcha lo. You shall certainly instead open your hand to him and give him enough for whatever he lacks, whatever he wants. The commandment is not simply to provide for the needs of the needy, not just to alleviate suffering, but to give them what they actually want. Sustenance, security, a decent life. It is much more than we seek to provide in our society today, in which the safety net seems to have as many holes as net. This is a powerful, dramatic statement in Deuteronomy. Open your hand. Surely give the needy poor what they ought to have. This is part of the strong economic agenda of Devarim. No one is supposed to accumulate great wealth or enormous power, and no one is to be left destitute. Most importantly, our moral obligation is to see that none of our brothers and sisters are left without what they need in order to survive. This is a foundational lesson in the morality of giving. Give not only what somebody needs in your opinion, give her or him enough to live reasonably with dignity. That's the true meaning of tzedakah, living justly and in righteousness. Judaism is at its heart pragmatic ethics. We're trained to make the world morally better through practical action. And so, after exploring the Talmudic dictum that even those who receive charity need to give something to those with even less, the rabbis conclude that tzedakah is meant to be a percentage of your income, not a hard figure, and that the same percentage, whether it's 10% or 5% of gross income, should be given in good times and bad, whether you are poor or very, very rich. It's true that when there is less income, there'll be smaller absolute money donated, but the percentage, and thus the integrity of the individual's morality, must be preserved. You know, over the 10 years I have hosted the Two Jewish Radio Show, we have seen good economic times, great economic times, terrible economic times, and plenty of in between. But I have never seen a time when there wasn't a great importance to tzedakah, to helping those in need, because there are always people in need. So, open your hand. Do so freely and generously, in good times, in tough times, at all times. It's the Jewish thing to do. It's the right thing to do. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll explore issues of Jewish interest, including Israel, with our guest, Congressman Ron Barber, who replaced his close friend and ours, Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, this year. He'll be back when we return on this 10th anniversary show of Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. And we feed you, too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In the latest sign the Syrian government is on the ropes, Syria's Prime Minister Riyad Hijab joined the anti-regime revolt and fled abroad. Washington and the opposition hailed this as a major blow to President Bashar al-Assad. Government forces, meanwhile, were poised to launch an assault on rebels in Aleppo, Syria's commercial capital. At least 137 more people were killed in violence around the country. In the highest-ranking defection of the nearly 17-month uprising against Assad, Hijab, a leading Sunni Muslim in the minority Alawite-dominated regime, announced he was joining the rebels after crossing into Jordan. He accused his former master Assad of carrying out genocide against his own people and said 4 decades of Assad family rule were now collapsing. Well, I don't know about that, but it's beginning to look like it. And it looks like we all should have stayed in college and studied physics. Jewish Russian tech investor Yuri Miller made instant millionaires out of 9 renowned physicists last week when he transferred $3 million each to their bank accounts. Among the 9 recipients of the Fundamental Physics Prize, which was established by Milner, was Israeli professor Nathan Seberg of the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, whose research focuses on various aspects of string theory, quantum field theory, and particle physics. And someday he may even be on The Big Bang Theory on TV. Eliezer Rabinovici of the Hebrew University's Rakah Institute of Physics says that Seberg was the first Israeli to be accepted as a member of the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. We are very proud of him and a little jealous, too, one suspects. Seberg previously worked at the Weizmann Institute. The billionaire donor, Yuri Milner, is a former physics student who dropped out of grad school in 1989 and later earned billions investing in internet companies like Facebook and Groupon. Milner declined to explain in detail how he selected which accomplishments to honor or why all of the winners are men. Well, frankly, a lot of physicists are men. Anyway, I truly see this as a start, Milner said. Going forward, it's going to be up to the committee to make those decisions. Alan Guth, a professor of physics at MIT, was also among the winners. It knocked me off my feet, he said. Guth added that before the transfer, his bank account had a balance of $200. Suddenly, it said $3,200,000. Then the bank charged a $12 wire transfer fee, but that was easily affordable. I guess it took a physicist to figure that out. Jewish American gymnast Ali Reisman won an individual gold medal in the floor exercise, as well as a bronze on the balance beam at the London Olympics to go with her team gold. She won the floor exercise in the team competition while performing her routine to a string-heavy version of Hava Nagila, and here it is. Reisman, 18 years old, of Needham, Massachusetts, took gold with a score of 15.6 in the floor exercises, edging a Romanian and a Russian, the silver and bronze medalists. Earlier in the day, Reisman won bronze on the balance beam after the U.S. lodged a protest against the original result. She had finished fourth behind the Romanian, but following the Americans' protest, the rescoring put the two gymnasts into a tie. Under tie-breaking procedures, Reisman took the bronze with a higher execution score. She had lost a bronze earlier in the all-around on the same tiebreaker, so I guess turnabout was fair play, at least as is defined in the Olympics. Allie Reisman helped Team USA take the women's team gold, the first Olympic gold medal for the U.S. gymnastics squad, women's gymnastics, since the 1996 games in Atlanta. Mazel tov to Allie Reisman on her victories last week in London, and also to Australian and New Zealand Jewish athletes who medaled in London. Nathan Cohen and his partner Joseph Sullivan won the men's double sculls to give New Zealand its first gold medal of the London Olympics. They rallied in the last 200 meters to overtake the Italians, finishing just 1.1 second ahead. And Australian kayaker Jessica Fox, also Jewish, won a silver medal in the kayak slalom final in the K-1 class. Her first Olympic medal followed a family tradition. Her mother, Miriam Jerusalmi Fox, won a bronze in the same race for France at the 96 Atlanta Games, and her British father, Richard, finished fourth in the same events at the 92 Olympics and coached the Australian kayak teams in the 2000 Sydney Games.
Memories like the corners of my mind, misty watercolor memories of the way we were.
Marvin Hamlisch scored dozens of films and Broadway shows, and his opulent compositions like The Way We Were and What I Did for Love are standards worthy of the American songbook. He died last week at the age of 68 after a brief illness in L.A. Hamlisch won Oscars, Grammys, Emmys, and a Pulitzer, many in the 1970s when his music was everywhere. Classically trained, Hamlisch began scoring films in the late 60s, including Woody Allen movies like Take the Money and Run and Bananas. But it was the soaring melodies of The Way We Were, including Barbara Streisand's hit rendition of the title song, that established Marvin Hamlisch as a top composer. That same year, he adapted several Scott Joplin numbers for The Sting, winning an Oscar and helping spark a ragtime revival. When The Entertainer became a top 10 hit, it was Hamlisch at the keyboard. The piano player in me found a long-lost brother in Scott Joplin, he said in an interview. Hamlisch also provided the music for the hit films Ordinary People, Sophie's Choice, and The Spy Who Loved Me, which included his song Nobody Does It Better.
Nobody does it better. Makes me feel sad for
Marvin Hamlisch wrote the music for A Chorus Line. He shared a Pulitzer Prize for Drama. It became one of the biggest hits in Broadway history, running for more than 6,000 performances. Marvin Frederick Hamlisch was raised on Manhattan's Upper West Side. His dad, Max, was an accordionist with a band that played tunes from Vienna. Some of Hamlisch's first compositions were done for Liza Minnelli when the two were in high school together. They recorded songs together as a present for Judy Garland, Liza's mom. Minnelli has continued to perform Hamlisch's music throughout her career. Hamlisch's teachers at the Juilliard School in Queens College accommodated his prodigious talent. They let him get school credit for professional work. His film score for The Swimmer, a 1968 movie starring Burt Lancaster, was accepted in lieu of a string quartet normally required for class. Hamlisch moved to Hollywood. He found immediate success scoring films, but continued to write for Broadway. He followed the mega success of The Way We Were and The Sting with A Chorus Line, which opened in 1975. It closed after 15 years, but was revived in 2008 for a couple of more years. He was also famously linked to Cindy Garvey, who left her husband Steve, the Dodgers' MVP first baseman, in the late 70s for Hamlish. Hamlish also scored the shows They're Playing Our Song, The Goodbye Girl, and The Sweet Smell of Success, was music director as well for concerts by Barbara Streisand and Liza Minnelli. In recent years, he was the principal pops conductor with several symphonies, including those in Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, and Dallas. In a 1977 interview, Hamlish talked about the technical side of fitting music to a film and said that critics underplay the importance of music for establishing emotions. "I'd love for them to see a movie once without the music," he said. Thanks to Marvin Hamlish in the 1970s, we didn't have to. Memories. And that's the 10th anniversary of Two Jewish's News of Jews Round the World. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our special guest this morning for our 10th anniversary of Two Jewish, Congressman Ron Barber. He's now been in Congress for about 2 months, replacing his former boss, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. He, of course, was shot along with Congresswoman Giffords and all the others on January 8th of 2011, has recovered and is representing Tucson. Now, can we make you an honorary Jewish congressman since you're replacing Gabby?
Absolutely. That's the first time I've made that offer, and I gladly accept.
Now, you do know about the ritual circumcision that's required now, Ron?
Well, now let me think about this.
Be careful what you say yes to.
I know, unintended consequences and all that.
Tell us a little bit about your perspective on Israel. Congressman Giffords took a number of trips to Israel, became a strong supporter of Israel, and had learned a lot kind of on the job, as it were. Tell us your perspective and how it fits into your district's needs and interests.
Well, I'm a very strong supporter of Israel, and it is Israel is a very important ally to the United States, and I'm firmly committed to doing everything I can to ensure that American foreign aid and support stays at the highest level possible. I sit on the House Armed Services Committee, a committee I requested to be on, because a lot of interest, obviously, in this district for military issues with two military installations. But I also wanted to be on the House Armed Services Committee so I could look out for the best interests of Israel. You know, there's a request in play right now to increase foreign aid to Israel, and I firmly support it. We need to make sure that Israel has the defensive capability that it needs to deal with the increasing threat, particularly from Iran and now from the change of government in Egypt, potentially. Israel has been a strong ally of ours, and we need to remain its strong ally. There are some specific programs that I want to make sure we fully fund, the Arrow 3 system, Iron Dome, and David Sling in particular. Those are missile systems and defense systems that will help ensure that Israel has the kind of defense it needs, particularly in the event that we might see Iran launch an attack. But in terms of Iran, let me speak about that for a moment, because I think that is the most serious threat we've ever seen to the state of Israel in recent history, and it's a threat not only to Israel, it's a threat to the region, it's a threat to Europe, and potentially a threat to the United States. We have to do everything we can not to contain Iran's nuclear capabilities, but to prevent them.
Syria seems to be very, very close to finally melting down. It's been in a very direct civil war. The prime minister just resigned, well, fled the country is really what he did. What do you see happening there?
And well, it's obviously turning into not just an uprising, but a civil war. And other rulers in the Middle East have seen the signs on the wall, but the president of Syria clearly does not. I believe that he's convinced himself that this is an outside offense against his government, and he's going to do everything he can to stop it, including already killing thousands of his citizens. You know, the history tells us that tyranny and dictatorships just don't last. And what's going on in Israel, I mean, in Syria, is a clear example of the people saying enough is enough.
One of the most important issues, I think, for most Jews is our deep commitment to social action, to social justice in the United States and anywhere we live. Tzedakah means justice, not just charity. In tougher economic times, government is often called upon to provide more support and usually has less money to provide more support. How do you see the federal government, Congress after all, is one that authorizes all funding, dealing with our current situation? What do you see going forward?
Well, we're facing a horrible cliff, if you will. It's part of the Budget Conciliation Act was this concept of sequestration, which means that unless we take additional action, there will be a 10% across-the-board cut in every federal agency, Health and Human Services, Environmental Protection, Department of Defense, and all the rest. And we are nearing that cliff. At the end of this year is all we have to take a different course. Because if we don't act, that 10% across-the-board cut will go into effect on January 1st of next year. We cannot let that happen. Because domestic spending is caught up in that as well. And we see the potential for the safety nets, as they're called, being destroyed, being just ravaged by those kinds of cuts. I firmly stand in favor of supporting and protecting Social Security and Medicare. They are essential lifelines for seniors when they reach their retirement years. They've invested all their lives, and they should have those services available to them when they retire. And there are threats on the horizon. The budget that was passed by the Republican majority in Congress just not too long ago would essentially turn Medicare into a voucher system, which is a reckless way of dealing with solvency. We have other ways we can do that. So I'm going to be a strong voice to make sure that when we do this sequestration vote, that we've already taken action to be more careful in our actions, but also to look at revenues. We cannot cut our way out of this budget deficit. We have to increase income to the federal government to provide for essential services for its people. And that means, I believe, that the people who have made the most money over the last decade, the people who are millionaires and billionaires, need to step up and pay their fair share. Middle-class Americans have done it for a decade, and they're getting further and further behind in wages and employment opportunities. It's now time for a fairer tax program. And I supported recently a bill in the Congress, in fact just last week, that would extend the tax cuts for middle-class Americans and would actually increase the taxes for people who are millionaires and billionaires. It's only the fair way to go, as we also deal with cuts in a prudent and careful manner.
Final question. Immigration's been an incredibly important issue in southern Arizona, but it's been an important issue for Jewish people for, 4,000 years since Abraham was migrating around the Middle East. Is there any chance of immigration reform? Is there something that can happen maybe after the election in this Congress?
Yes, I think so. In fact, I'm certain of it. First of all, I'm a very strong supporter of good border security measures. I represent an area of the country that has got a long border with Mexico, and the violence and the drug cartels have to be stopped. But having said that, I believe Americans are getting closer to a real understanding of the important things we can do to reform our broken immigration system. I support the DREAM Act. I think a lot of Americans do. In fact, there's a majority of Arizonans who do. I support a guest worker program so that people can come here legally, safely, and return home. And also, other aspects of the immigration system have to be looked at, and we have to do something to bring 12 million people out of the shadows and into the light in terms of a path to legal status. And the president did recently to defer deportations of our young people so they can go to work is a policy I support. So I believe there's a lot can be done, but you're right in saying this will not happen until we get into the new congressional session in January, and whoever's in the White House hopefully will pursue it as well. It's an important issue that's been left on the table far too long.
I want to thank Congressman Ron Barber for a great visit here on Too Jewish, to wish him success in Congress and his upcoming campaign. Ron, mazel tov on being in Congress. We look forward to visiting again soon.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out in this 10th anniversary show.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best.
To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock when we will be celebrating our 10th anniversary and one more show of Too Jewish. Just kidding. These celebrations can only go on so long. Even Jewish holidays have to end. Our guest next Sunday is Professor Bert Vysotsky of the Jewish Theological Seminary, the creator of the Genesis Project and a great pioneer in international Jewish-Muslim dialogue. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes and on our TooJewishRadio.com website and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Avanim, always our house Jewish rock band. It's the celebratory Psalm Bitachta, written by my dad, Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Give us a